of them together, what Arnold Schwarzenegger was cleared to run for the governorship here in the state of California. So Warren Buffett is part and parcel of this elite group that rules the world. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. My second question was a little interesting about the Franklin cover-up.
The Franklin cover-up,
yeah,
right. Okay. Would you want to tell our listeners a little bit about the Franklin cover-up in case they don't know about it?
Actually, what was happening was this man named Larry King, he was a big shot, I guess, in the Republican Party in Nebraska, and he was procuring little children from Boys Town, Nebraska,
right,
and sending them to D.C., and there was a big courtroom thing about it. There was a big trial, and some of the witnesses were sent to jail. And several people, there was a private investigator involved named Gary Caradori, who was hired by Lauren Schmidt, who was a state senator, I believe, in Nebraska, to investigate this thing. And they turned up all kinds of stuff, and apparently what they did was, from what I heard, they threatened Kerry Garadori, you know, for his investigation, and eventually they blew up his plane.
All right. Well, for our listeners out there, there was an extensive pedophile ring in the Middle West, and it extended right into the White House, and some of the most powerful and wealthy men in the world today were involved in this pedophile ring. And they were simply taking boys from Boys Town and elsewhere and kidnapping them, and some of them have died and, of course, were probably murdered. There are very, very powerful and very evil people at the highest levels of our government. And Senator John DeCamp was a state senator,
yeah,
I believe it was, was it Nebraska where he is?
Yes.
All right. Senator DeCamp had uncovered this. He was very, very popular. Was elected year after year. He's a lawyer, and he uncovered this. He wrote the book. He exposed this whole thing, and he named certain of the most powerful and wealthy people in America in this. So anyway, they threatened the DeCamp as well, and certainly he told me that personally that they had actually come to his home. His kids were out in the front yard. They drove a car up onto the grass there. They ran over his child's dog that was there several times and told the children, "Tell your dad this will happen to you if he doesn't lay off." At that point, he had to move out of town, give up his law practice. He lives in a very, very small town in Nebraska. Next week, while we'll be interviewing a man who works very closely with him, Ted Gunderson, who's now moved to that town because his life has been threatened many times. Ted actually headed the FBI office in Los Angeles for many years. But because he broke ranks and began talking about the corruption in the FBI, why he's become a non-person, and his life has been threatened as well. So Ted will be with us next week.
Oh, wow. There was one other thing. Apparently, Mr. DeCamp was a good friend of William Colby, and William Colby ended up drowning.
Well, under very, very strange circumstances.
Very strange.
William Colby, for our listeners, was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was the director of the Central Intelligence Agency during the Vietnam War and was involved with some very, 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 very bad things. He was involved with the Phoenix program over there where they were simply assassinating Vietnamese civilians. They killed between 20 and 40,000 of them. In many cases, they were tortured to death by our government. This was a CIA operation and eventually taken over by the Army. I've talked to people who were involved in that. We have several tapes with people who were involved. This has been kept quiet from the American people. Well, Colby apparently was writing his memoirs, and he was off, and this is very unusual. Here's the man who ordinarily would have all sorts of bodyguards, ex-head of the CIA, and yet he's off by himself at a summer cabin, and he's fixing dinner. It's storming on the lake. He gets into his canoe, paddles out to the middle of the lake. The canoe gets upset, and he drowns. And there are many, many people who think that William Colby was suicided, as you might say.
Yeah, right.
And this is the sort of thing that happens, but unfortunately, when you do evil things, sometimes why they come back to get you.
Yeah, you know, I have a good feeling who it was in Washington, D.C. that was involved in it. I won't say anything about it because, you know.
Well, we don't know. All we know is that Colby's body was found several days later. And, of course, when they went into the house, why, the dinner was still on the stove. And you wonder why he would leave his cooking there on the stove and paddle out into the middle of the lake. And then, of course, drowned. But you see, we live in a violent world, Ray. People don't like to think about this sort of thing, but there really are evil and wicked people. I've actually talked on my own programs to 3 CIA assassins, and at least 3 of the people that I've talked to through the years have been outright killed, you know, because of what they were doing and the information they were trying to get out. I've had a number of my people who have talked to me had visits from the black helicopters, and yes, there really are black helicopters. So they will really stop at nothing. I've had many, many people who've told me that they've been threatened or their families have been threatened. Colonel Marvin, who was with us last night, why, of course, they called his wife and said, well, you tell Colonel Marvin, he may not fear anyone but God, but he has grandchildren. And the poor wife, of course, was extremely emotionally distraught by that remark for many years because they were threatening to kill their grandchildren.
Oh, my.
And these people would do it. They have wicked people here. And who are you going to report it to? The government?
It shows you that, actually, too, that they will do stop at nothing to preserve this wicked system of things that's going on in Washington, D.C.
Well, that's why we need to take America back from the wicked people. And we need to expose them because the one thing they cannot stand is exposure. Like vampires, they would disappear at the first rays of dawn. And our job is to expose them, and this is what we try to do 5 hours a day.
Okay. That's about all.
Well, Ray, thanks very much for calling. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. So give us a call, and we'll certainly try to get things straightened, answer any of the questions we can for you, or let you have your say. This is Open Line Wednesday, and if you have a subject you'd like to talk about different than mine, give us a call. Again, the number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we started out the evening talking about the bringing of the Ayatollah Khomeini to power in 1979. I remember what happened at that time quite well. And, of course, it was the American State Department representatives who went to the Shah of Iran and told him he would leave the country the next day. And that's exactly what Ambassador Earl Smith was ordered to do in 1959 to Batista in Cuba. He was ordered to leave the next day so we could bring Fidel Castro to power. And the United States brought Fidel Castro to power in Cuba and has kept him in power all this time. You had the phony Bay of Pigs invasion. You had the phony missile crisis. Then, of course, we had the Elian Gonzalez crisis when Elian, of course, was here. He had been plucked from the sea. And he wanted to stay here, and his relatives wanted him to stay here. And actually, his father wanted him to stay here because his father was all in favor of him coming to America. But, of course, I'm sure that the father's life was threatened by Fidel Castro, and he said what he was told to say. He wasn't allowed to come with his wife. They kept his second wife there, and they would have probably tortured her to death if he hadn't done what he was told to do and done the same thing with him, tracked him down and tortured him to death. So he said, no, I wanted him to come home. So the President of the United States sent 125-man, heavily armed SWAT team down to Miami to capture Elian Gonzalez so they could send him back to Cuba to build up the prestige of Fidel Castro, both in Cuba and throughout the rest of the world, and give the Cuban people that feeling of helplessness that even Americans will support Fidel Castro. Why, if he was our enemy, would they have done something like that? And you got to learn to ask questions. When things don't seem to be as they should be, there's always a logical answer, but it's not the answer you're going to get from Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Brian Williams or the other pundits who are paid so much money not to reveal the truth, but to conceal the truth about the truly spiritual battle that's being fought today. Well, let's get back to Iran. Of course, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But once the Ayatollah Khomeini and his radical Muslims were placed in power, and remember the CIA had been financing this radical Islamic movement for many years, and if you haven't read the book, The Devil's Game by Robert Dreyfus, you need to get it to find out how the British intelligence, MI6, had been financing the Muslim Brotherhood starting in 1928, which is really behind this whole resurgence of the radical Islamic movement. And then, of course, through our support for the Saudi Arabia, we were financing the Wahhabi movement, which is centered there, which is the other branch of the radical Islamic movement. And then, of course, after the Second World War, when America moved into predominance in the Near East and the Middle East, while we were doing everything we could to support the radical Islamic movement. Now, the justification was, well, see, they would certainly be anti-communist. The radical Islamic people would be anti-communist. So we want to support them against the other Muslims who might be willing to work with the communists. So we were going to create a new enemy, a new division within the Muslim faith. And if you read Robert Dreyfus's book, you'll find out the origin of Hamas, the wicked terrorist movement that threatens Israel today. Who finances? Why Israel and the CIA. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is Open Line Wednesday. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a subject you'd like to talk about, that's what Open Lines is all about. But we were simply going to the fact that it was the American Central Intelligence Agency that toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollahs to power. And the Ayatollahs had been living in France prior to that time, financed in large part by the Central Intelligence Agency. And it was the Central Intelligence Agency that took him to Iran to seize power. Now, shortly after the Ayatollah took power, why, a small group of students went to the embassy in Tehran and occupied it for 4 or 5 days and just simply seized the embassy. And at that time, the American ambassador was a man named William H. Sullivan. Now, I had the unique opportunity to spend a morning, a good part of a morning, with William H. Sullivan. I think it was about 1980 when we actually were going to take a film crew to from South Carolina. We brought it to Washington, D.C., and we had intended to go up to New York City to film William H. Sullivan, but we were unable to do that. But we did have an opportunity to talk to him. He told me what happened at that time when the students occupied the American embassy. They told him, you know, if you allow the Shah, now by this time the Shah had been Tehran, had left Iran, but they said, if you allow the Shah to come to the United States, we will come back and once seize the embassy and we'll hold it this time. So William H. Sullivan, with finishing his tour of his time there in the State Department, he returned at that point to the United States. He told me that he told Zygmunt Brzezinski and President Carter exactly what he had been told. And what did they do at that time? Why, they brought the Shah of Iran to the United States for medical treatment, because apparently he was quite ill. And then they brought a surgeon from Canada to treat him here. Now, why did they send him to Canada? They wanted, in my opinion, and this was Ambassador Sullivan's opinion, they wanted to provoke the seizure of the embassy again, and that's exactly what happened. The students retook the American embassy, and they held it. Then, of course, we had to have this courageous attempt to rescue them. And I remember William H. Sullivan telling me, you know, he just never understood why they launched this special forces unit, half a dozen helicopters and And he said, you know, that was my embassy. Supposedly they were going to sweep in with their helicopters and take the, retake the embassy and then take everybody out of there in helicopters. He said, that was my embassy. There was no way it could have worked. There was absolutely no way that this rescue effort would have succeeded. And then, of course, the helicopters. Now, remember, we've got very smart people in the military, but these helicopters, why, of course, they get sand into the air intake units, and, of course, they get caught in a sandstorm, and one of the helicopters crashes, and some people are killed, and they abort the mission. First of all, why would you tell anybody that this has happened? And how could it be that they'd be so stupid not to suspect that when you're in a desert, there might be sand that would get into the air conditioning unit for the helicopter's engines? And I'll never forget William H. Sullivan telling me, you know, he said, I would hate to think that this whole thing was staged. He said, I know the man who was in charge of it. There is no way it could have worked. How could they have done such a terrible job? I would hate to think that the whole thing was staged. I would hate to think the whole thing was staged. Well, of course, you remember everybody was wearing yellow ribbons, but people don't understand that the people in Iran wanted to give the hostages back, and we wouldn't take them. I interviewed Congressman George Hansen, who went over there and negotiated the release of the hostages, and of course that got the State Department down on him. They trumped up charges and sent him off to prison sometime later, and where he was tortured for a number of years. That's Congressman George Hansen. And then, of course, they still wanted to give the hostages back, and that came to the October surprise, and I talked actually to the pilot of the Blackbird plane, who actually flew George Bush to Paris to meet with the representatives of Iran so that they would agree to keep the hostages until President Reagan was elected. They did not want to have Jimmy Carter reelected. Certainly, if had the hostages been released, Jimmy Carter might have been reelected. They didn't want that. The whole thing was staged. They left the hostages there until just the morning when Ronald Reagan was inaugurated, and it was a rainy morning. It was overcast. Suddenly, the announcement comes that the hostages have been released, and everybody is just so gratified to know. And suddenly the clouds separate, the sun comes out, we have a new day. And we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Tony calling in from Soquel. Hi, Tony. How you doing?
Oh, not too bad tonight.
Okay, it's good to hear from you.
And I know who'll be doing your call screening tomorrow night.
All right. No, actually, fine. We'd love to have you tomorrow night. Looking forward to it.
I didn't forget.
Okay, thanks so much.
I happen to have a crazy theory about this whole thing about Iraq.
All right, fine. Well, let's hear your theory.
Well, the day that our illustrious president launched this invasion into Iraq, I called you up and made a prediction. And you probably forgot that a long time ago. But I really haven't changed my mind too much. I think it's still a possibility. And my question is why did they hang Saddam's double?
Well, you're suggesting that maybe it was not Saddam who was hung at all. In fact, how do we know they really hung him? All we know is what they told us.
Well, I thought it was interesting that the day that they captured his double, that they said that they knew it was him because they did a DNA check. Now, I was wondering where they got the DNA from, to do the cross-check.
Well, you have to be skeptical of everything that's going on today. And, there are many, many people who believe, first of all, I've heard several stories of people who said that they had killed Saddam Hussein. Several soldiers said that they'd seen his dead body long before whoever this was captured. And there are many people who feel that he really didn't look that much like Saddam Hussein, and that maybe this whole thing was staged for the benefit of the American people. We don't know, and they're not about to tell us. But the one thing you can be certain of is that we can't believe anything we're told.
Oh, no. Well, I thought it was interesting, amongst other things, that this Saddam was 6 inches too short than the other Saddam, as far as the double that they hanged. and that he cussed in perfect English, where the other sad M didn't know a word of English. And if you look at a photo of the sad M that we know was sad M versus this one, his eyes are not the same. But the thing that really makes me question was that during the first Gulf War, you know, in 1990, there was a lot of talk going on about how the French and the Germans had built these huge underground bases for Saddam Hussein. And in fact, one of the ones that they had built was so deep and so big that if we dropped a hydrogen bomb on it, according to the media, it wouldn't even rattle his China. Now, if that was true, what they were saying back then why would this guy be hiding in some dirt pit someplace in Tikrit?
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Tony. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and this is Open Lines Wednesday. Tony, calling from SoCal, has suggested that the man that was hanged was not really Saddam Hussein. And I was simply asking, you know, how do we even know that they hung him? All we know is what we've been told. Is it really true? I mean, they can come up with any sort of pictures. They can come up with any story that they want to. And I think we have to be very careful of anything that we are shown. Remember the story of Nicholas Berg, the American who was beheaded on television? We saw it on television. We know it happened, but there was no blood. Could you imagine cutting off somebody's head and there's no blood there? And, of course, what really happened to Nicholas Berg is, and I believe he was working for the CIA. In fact, what very few people know is that Nicholas Berg had several encounters with a man named Zacharias Massui in Norman, Oklahoma, when Massui was actually there training to learn how to fly planes. What are the chances that Nicholas Berg would have been in Norman, Oklahoma, and meeting with Zacharias Massui before he goes over into this war zone in Iraq to sell cell phones? He was been over there for a year selling cell phones. And then, of course, he gets picked up by the Iraqis. He's turned over to the Americans. The Americans supposedly turn him loose. And the next thing we know, why we're seeing these pictures of these big, a great big muscular people wearing a ski mask, and they're going to behead him on television. They behead him, and there's no blood. Isn't that strange? So, I think we have to be very careful to believe anything that we're told, and especially now with the ability to make anything happen, on television. I've even seen dinosaurs on television, real live dinosaurs running. Of course, it's all simulated. And I believe that I don't know whether they killed Saddam Hussein, whether they killed the devil, or they killed anybody at all.
Well, one of the things that I think is quite telling was the last conflict between Israel and Hamas.
Right.
Okay, well...
Now, wait a minute. Are you speaking of the conflict between Israel and Hamas? You're speaking of the Lebanese War? You're speaking of...
Yes, just a few months back.
All right.
There was about 40 days there where Hamas was launching their missiles into Israel. And,
all right.
You know, it was on TV every day.
All right.
You know, for like 40 days or whatever it was. But this is, the Israeli people feel that they lost this war.
Really? And that was the Lebanese war you're speaking of then?
Yes, in Lebanon. Right.
All right, but see, that's Hezbollah in Lebanon.
Hamas
is in Palestine. Hezbollah is in Lebanon. So you're absolutely right. But the reason that they lost the war is because they were required. We ordered them to stop before they finished the job. I mean, their tanks were there. They'd done some terrible things. They destroyed a lot of the civilian infrastructure. They'd dropped a lot of cluster bombs. And then a man named Javier Solana, and for those of you who listen to our programs regularly, you will know he is certainly a candidate for the Antichrist. He is the most powerful man in Europe, who heads the Western European military zone in NATO, and Javier Solana took a trip over there to Israel and told Mr. Olmert, "You will stop today." And Mr. Olmert said, "Yes, sir." The head of a sovereign state, of course, could not argue with Javier Solana, because there's an invisible force behind this man.
Well, I think that was Thank you for correcting me on the Hezbollah, not Hamas. But Hezbollah is fairly well known from what I've been reading on some of the international wire services. The reason they survived the cluster bombing and that Israel was doing was that because they were basically hiding underground.
Right.
They had underground bases. And I'm trying to say that there is a precedent being set here, that I believe that the Arab states are taking instructions from Saddam Hussein. I don't believe for a minute that he's dead, even though George Bush wants us to believe so. And I believe that he set the precedent when we invaded him. There was one of his generals that defected, and I was reading something on the Internet. It might have been World Net Daily or somewhere. I don't remember exactly. But he said that that Saddam, the reason that they did not offer hardly any resistance, because it was his plan to go underground and to fight a guerrilla war. And that's exactly what they've been doing. And
I think though when they said go underground, they meant that they were not going to go into direct confrontation with the American forces. They were simply going to fade back, and then and I don't think they were suggesting that Saddam was going to hide underground, although that's possible.
Well,
and his army would go underground. In other words, they would look like civilians, and then suddenly they would surface and begin fighting again. You're absolutely right. That was always the plan, and our government knew that. But
well,
they couldn't let the American people know that they knew that. They knew we have very smart people in Washington, D.C. They knew that we were moving exactly where we are today.
Well, I do believe that, you know, I will believe the media that what they were telling us in 1990, that the French and the Germans were building huge underground, almost cities for Saddam Hussein and bunkers.
I think you're probably right.
And I you know, I'm crazy, but I think he's still hiding out, that he's directing what's going on over there, and that he's just waiting for the time that when our troops are either gone or very weak, that we haven't seen the last of him. And that's just my feeling. And like I said, it's probably a crazy idea, and I'm probably crazy to not believe George Bush and Condoleezza Rice, but I just don't think we've seen the end result yet.
I think really you need to look at the history of Saddam Hussein. We have books that were written 20 years ago that will talk about how Saddam Hussein was a CIA assassin in the late 1950s. In fact, the first time he was supposed to kill anybody, he became so violently ill to his stomach, it was so repulsive to him, he couldn't do it. But we trained him well. And, of course, by 1979, he was a confirmed killer. And, of course, anybody who got in his way did get assassinated. Certainly by 1980, we were funding Saddam Hussein. We funded Saddam Hussein all during the 1980s. And that's beautifully covered in an article we offer to one of our listeners. Came out of the Washington Post. It's called When an Ally Becomes an Enemy. We funded Saddam Hussein, and we gave him the chemical and biological warfare weapons, and the chemical weapons that he used against the Kurds, that he used against the Iranians, and he killed, you know, at least 100,000 Kurds, largely with chemical weapons provided by our government. That's why they had to, of course, blow up the bunkers with the chemical and biological weapons at Kamachia and elsewhere during the first Gulf War, because we could never allow the American people to know that we'd given him all those chemical weapons in violations of every international agreement. And we actually have an interview with one of the Special Forces men who was actually sent over there to help Saddam Hussein use the chemical weapons on the Iranians. And we had a fascinating time talking to him. Well, then, of course, we had the first Gulf War. And then we have a great book. It's called See No Evil, written by Robert Baer, who was a CIA agent. And he says that all during the 1980s, everybody in Iraq believed that the U.S. government was keeping Saddam Hussein in power. And the statement made by Robert Baer is he never met an Iraqi who didn't believe that the United States government was keeping Saddam Hussein in power. He listed two instances where the military tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein, And in both instances, the military officers were betrayed by the American State Department. Now, why would they do anything that stupid? And I don't think it was stupid at all. I think everything's going on a cosmic timetable, some sort of a cosmic plan, waiting for this time in history as we begin moving towards World War III. So whether Saddam is really dead or alive, I believe he has always been used and many times was knowingly working with our government.
Well, I'm of the opinion that we haven't seen the end of them yet. And I'm also of the opinion that there is a verse in the Bible that says about a particular individual that he will survive a mortal wound and that all of the world would look upon him in amazement.
Well, you're suggesting that Saddam is the Antichrist?
Right. I'm probably crazy to think so.
Uh-huh.
But he's going to take three nations by force, and then the other seven will go along with him. There's only one 10-nation confederacy on the planet, and that's the Arab League. And also that, according to Daniel, the Antichrist is going to come from the Seleucid portion of Alexander the Great's kingdom, which is modern-day Turkey, Iraq, and Iran. Now, I'm not saying he is, okay, but I just don't know of anybody else who fits the bill.
All right. Tony, we will mark that down on our calendar, and we'll say we heard it here first from Tony, and we'll just wait and see how things unfold.
Well, if something happens to where we haven't seen the end of them.
All right.
All I'm saying is, don't be surprised.
All right, fine, Tony. Thank you so very much. And we'll
probably crazy.
No, you're not crazy. You are questioning what's going on. I do not believe that, but who knows? Maybe you're right and I'm wrong.
I don't even believe it myself.
All right.
But there's nothing else that makes sense.
Well, we'll wait and see.
And I just do not believe for a minute that they hanged him.
All right. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Good night. God bless. And my telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question, a comment, why, we'd love to hear from you. This is Open Lines Wednesday. Under any circumstances, as we look at Iran today, it should be very obvious, and you're reading the newspapers, that our government is intent upon overthrowing the current government or replacing the current government of Iran that we put into power back in 1979. Now, we have our CIA agents there working, trying to overthrow the government at the present time. We're broadcasting announcements and propaganda into Iran, trying to overthrow the government. Apparently half the population, we've heard this from a number of sources, and I believe it to be true, about half the population of Iran is somewhere between 15 and 24 because they killed so many people there during the Iran-Iraqi war. They killed about 1 million young men during that period of time. And then after the war, of course, then they began having children. And so population, you know, is largely about half of it, 15 to 25, and they don't like the mullahs. They do not like this radical form of Islam. They want to be more like the West. And so they want an element of freedom, and of course poverty is increasing over there. They're having real economic problems. Inflation is running 10 to 12% at the present time, which is really very demoralizing. Their trade is really the only source of income that they have now is oil, and the price of oil is down considerably. So this is having a tremendous impact on Iran. President Ahmadinejad, who I've always said looked like he came from Central Casting, probably the same agency where they got Saddam Hussein, President Ahmadinejad appears to be playing a part. I mean, what logical man, you know, leading a country, that certainly, could never possibly stand up militarily to the United States, would be doing everything they could to antagonize the world. Talking about how Israel would be wiped off the face of the map, how the United States and the West were going to be destroyed, putting on programs saying there was no Holocaust, traveling to South America to meet and negotiate treaties with Hugo Chavez, who certainly is a communist, and of course with the other Marxists in Central America and South America. We're talking about I believe it's Morales in Bolivia, the new president of Ecuador. I mean, he's down there, supposedly even telling them to begin trying to develop their own nuclear weapons so that they can attack the United States if the United States attacks Iran. Is it logical, thinking about what's going on, that this man would be doing this sort of thing? Because what it's like poking a stick at a rattlesnake. I mean, you poke a stick at a rattlesnake, or maybe let's take a hibernating bear. You're in a cave, you see a hibernating bear, and you take a big club and you hit him over the head. How many logical people would do that? Well, of course, the explanation that's given is that President Ahmadinejad is part of the Hejatiya Society, which really believes that they can, if they have a nuclear war, they will be able to bring back the Mahdi, who disappeared in the 9th century, and that he will come then. He was sort of like the Muslim Messiah. And, of course, there will be this great conflict, this horrible, horrible war, and then the Muslims will come forward, and with the Mahdi, they will rule the world. Well, I just cannot believe that all this is really true. I believe that this is a story that's been given us to somehow justify the fact that we have a madman over there. He's soon going to have his hands on nuclear weapons and threaten the security of the United States, and that's why we're going to have to go to war. And if you think about what's happening rationally, it just doesn't make sense. We now have two carrier strike forces in the Persian Gulf, as well as the Boxer, which is a sort of a helicopter attack. It's got, I think, four or five ships in it, a lot of Marines on board, so they can immediately land those for an invasion. Why are all those things over in the Persian Gulf? I mean, well, one explanation was, we're planning on going to war. If you heard President Bush's interview with 60 Minutes about 2 weeks ago, he was asked about Iran. He said, we will not allow them, to, of course, continuing, financing the people who are killing our boys. And, of course, you know, they were saying, well, certainly the American people don't want to go to war. They want to get out of this war in Iraq. And President Bush said, it doesn't matter, in effect. He said, it doesn't matter what the American people think. Doesn't matter what Congress thinks. I make the decisions. I am the commander-in-chief, and I will do what I think is necessary. Well, these are the words of a dictator, ladies and gentlemen. These are the words of a man who doesn't believe in the Constitution. He was not elected to take us into war. If we went into Afghanistan to capture Osama bin Laden and he escaped, why have we pulled out of Afghanistan and let the people of Afghanistan solve the problem? If we went into Iraq to, depose Saddam Hussein, now that he's deposed, why do we simply pull out? And the answer is, we did not go into Afghanistan to catch Osama bin Laden. We did not go into Iraq to depose Saddam Hussein. We went into Iraq to create chaos. And we've done a great job of it. You could not do this bad a job intentionally. We have allowed the Mahdi's army, which of course is a Shia army, to exist. I mean, if you went into a country, you know, and you were going to take it over militarily, wouldn't you disband this renegade army that's not answerable to you? At least supposedly the Iraqi army is answerable to us, but the Mahdi's army is not. And, of course, it's provided the personnel and the weapons for the death squad that are killing the Sunnis, and the Sunnis are killing the Shias, and the Shias are killing the Sunnis, and we've had a civil war there. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call if you agree, if you disagree. But, you know, the situation goes from bad to worse in Iraq today. And though the president consistently denies there's a civil war there, everybody knows there's a civil war, so why doesn't the president admit there's a civil war? And you have this situation that goes back 1,300 years where the Shia Muslims of course, hate the Sunni Muslims, and the Sunni Muslims hate the Shia Muslims. And, of course, these are just two branches of Islam that have always been at war with one another. And now, of course, you have in Baghdad simply, genocide going on. You have efforts, ethnic cleansing, where, of course, in certain areas of the city, they're killing all the Shia Muslims. In other areas, they're killing all the Sunni Muslims. And, of course, one of the largest sources of the murder that's going on are the Shia death squads. Where are they getting their money? Where are they getting their training? Why, we train them. We train them for the police. We train them for the military. We gave them the weapons. And now they're killing the Sunnis. We are arming them. And, of course, they are part of the Mahdi's army that is there. This Bukwasakwar. I never can pronounce his name quite correctly, but he is the black turban man. Why don't we simply arrest him and dissolve his private army? How can you have any peace in that country when you've got a private army there that is backing the death squads? And the answer is you cannot. So why don't we do what's logical and simply disband the army and put the whole country under martial law? Oh, we couldn't do that sort of thing. They always have the excuses for not doing what's logical, just like in Vietnam. There was always excuses why we couldn't go after after North Vietnam, why we couldn't bomb Hanoi until suddenly there was no longer any opposition, why we couldn't bomb the electric plants in North Vietnam, why we couldn't bomb the dikes in North Vietnam and flood the country. Oh, we couldn't do any of those things. We could have done it. We could have won the war. We weren't allowed to win the war in Vietnam. And we're not being allowed to win the war in Iraq today. Our military is fighting, our men are brave, but they're being betrayed by their leaders. It's like deja vu all over again. It is Vietnam all over again. And how many times you've had people say, this is not Vietnam, this is no similarity at all. And yes, it is. It's another no-win war. And until people understand that, we have leaders who have a different agenda because they worship a different god. And we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this hour. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And we certainly would welcome your support for our efforts. We have, as you know, have almost 60 outlets every single week, and we have an opportunity to reach an awful lot of people with information they would never get elsewhere, but quite frankly, we need your help to continue what we have, and if we ever hope to be able to expand even further, why, we're going to have to be hearing from you. So if you believe that we are truly involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope many of you, if you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will get it and distribute it. You'll certainly get our three pamphlets set, the occult hierarchy, because there is an occult hierarchy that rules the world. And they talk about it openly in their own writings, and we simply tell you what they say in their writings. This is a compilation of my newsletters that deal with the occult and some of the newsletters that Dr. Dennis Cuddy has written for me. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get the occult hierarchy, Brotherhood of Darkness, we've got Herman calling in here. Hi, Herman. Do you have a quick question or comment?
Yes, Doctor. Just a couple of things. Where are the protests? We don't have any protests. I've talked to people who claim in various cities that there have been protests against the war, but they're not being covered by the media. And then you turn on the religious radio stations and the Sunday morning big-time preachers, and they're giving us platitudes about Christianity, but nothing about what's really going on. And just your comment about that, because it seems to be our nation has turned away from God, from true Christianity, and therefore it's no longer relevant.
I think you're absolutely right. Where is the outcry about the 600,000, or maybe it's only 100,000 Iraqi civilians that have been slaughtered? or maybe it's closer to 700,000 or 800,000 Iraqi civilians. Are we not concerned about them? Is not every one of them a unique individual made in the image and likeness of God? Or are we to hate them because they're Muslims? And I really fault our Christian leaders for failing to speak out against the morality of this war. This is not a just war. Under any circumstances, I haven't even heard them speak out against the torture. They don't want to be controversial because they have more fear of government than they have of God. We're in real trouble in America today, Herman.
Well, also maybe because a lot of them are 501(c) corporations, so they are beholden for their tax-exempt status to the government.
Maybe that's the reason. Who knows? I don't know why. Are they not speaking out any more than was the real reason why the ministers didn't speak out in Hitler's Germany? But if you haven't read that book, Hitler's Cross, that tells the story of what happened to the church in Hitler's Germany, every American should read it. It's available through our ministry. And as you read that book about what happened in Hitler's Germany to the church, and then you see what's happening in America today, it's like deja vu all over again.
And just to remind the listeners that at the very beginning of his reign in power, Adolf Hitler told the German people he was a Christian.
He did that. Okay,
well, he was, defending Christian civilization.
Defending Christian civilization against those other wicked people. Hey, God bless. Thanks so much for calling her.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly remember our webpage, www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet. You can certainly listen to it 4 hours a day on shortwave. We encourage you to tell others about our program. We even have a satellite, Telstar 5. You can listen to us 9 hours a day. Of course, you won't get anything accomplished, but you certainly can learn a lot, and we encourage you to get other people listening to our programs, to understand that nothing is as it appears to be, because there are other forces at work here. There seems to be a cosmic timetable that is plunging us hell-bound towards an increased war in the Middle East. And I don't know that God's going to intervene. Dan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and we do hope that that many of you will check them, try to prove us wrong, and if you cannot prove us wrong, that you'll join us in this epic struggle. A struggle for the very souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Well, our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana, and we're going to be talking about some of the videos she's made. We're going to be talking about the spreading of belief in witchcraft and the supernatural among our young, and even increasing belief in the supernatural among many of the adults in this country. And there is a growing fascination with this idea of being able to find the real power, the hidden power that is hidden within each one of us. And it is that old adage that began in the Garden of Eden. When the serpent said to Eve, "And ye shall be as gods." And this has been the message down through the eons, that man has within his own capacity the ability to be as God. And of course to have these supernatural powers, to be able to contact this other dimension. And of course on the front line of this is a woman who actually came out of the occult, out of the New Age movement, having been born in India and raised in a British family, during the latter days of the British Empire, and then going to England and becoming involved with the New Age movement, and then becoming a Christian, and Carol's been working very hard for many years to expose this fifth column, this subversive religious fifth column within our society today. Carol, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. It is always such a wonderful privilege to be with you.
Well, tell us what you're seeing today, because things are moving very, very fast as these ideas are being spread in our children and even in our adults.
Oh, it is just incredible how quickly things are moving. You're absolutely right. About 20 years ago, I made a film called Gods of the New Age, and I wrote a book of the same title. And just watching in the past two decades the change of Eastern mysticism, Hinduism, yoga, the way that yoga is now being taught in schools. It is just incredible. I am on the verge of finishing a film on yoga. And in fact, this very week I'm concluding it, and you are going to get one of the first copies, which I am very excited to tell you about. But, you know, just the incredible thing of how yoga has now completely appeared to be, is marketed as though it isn't a Hindu Eastern mystical practice.
But isn't this really very similar to what we're actually taking up in so many of our Christian churches today, in the name of contemplative prayer, where you sort of put yourself into this, in this state of almost this state of almost like a state that you'd have with yoga?
Exactly. You're absolutely right. It's crossed into markets. It's gone across from secular thinking into our Christian institutions and organizations, and in fact, this is what my latest film is about, how it has come into the church, how it is presenting itself in the church, how we are opening ourselves up to this spiritual realm out there without even calling it a spiritual realm in some cases. I mean, it's just amazing. 20 years, 30 years ago, it was so obvious that Eastern mysticism, that yoga came from Hinduism. It was so obvious it came from India. But then it started getting packaged as a scientific program, as though it was somehow scientifically proved that it was able to bring about a fitness. It was able to...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, you go right ahead and pick your thought up there, Carol.
I was just mentioning that the way that yoga became repackaged, as though they could take away the spiritual aspects of it, as though it could be scientifically monitored somehow, that the sort of spiritual connection that one opened oneself up to could be monitored in a scientific way and, presented as... Scientifically showing improvement. For instance, just recently in 2003, I believe it was, there were researchers at California State University that studied these test scores at the Accelerated School District, and particularly focused in on this new yoga that is being taught to children in schools, 100 schools across 26 states. They've adopted this Goobers yoga educational program, and more than 300 physical education instructors have been trained in it. So here we had the researchers of the California State University looking into how the students were performing. And so scientifically, they have found a correlation between the kids that take yoga, that they've got better behavior, better grades, and they said these young kids that have been taking these programs are much more fit than the district average, you know, in the physical fitness thing. So they take these tests, they show that they're scientifically supposedly accelerated and being able to perform better, and they're not seeing that here in schools where they've taken out the Bible, they've taken out prayer, they've taken out Christian foundational anything that is associated with a Christian worldview, and yet they're bringing in Eastern mysticism, completely connected with yoga, Hinduism. All of that is part of this Eastern mystical worldview, and this is now being brought into school where they say that they can empty, that they can separate the physical from the spiritual. So it's absolutely amazing that this has grown. I mean, at a time when we've got Harry Potter being coming into the schools, where the Bible's being taken out, Harry Potter's been allowed to be read aloud in the classrooms, and here we've got witchcraft brought in a child-friendly way to our young students, teaching them all about this young wizard, learning wizardry.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, Carol. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Carol Matrician, and we're talking about yoga that is coming into our schools, which is basically a form of Eastern mysticism. Could you explain to our listeners who really don't understand yoga what this is, how it works, and why it is so deadly dangerous?
Well, Dr. Stan, as you said earlier in your program, I was born and raised in India, and I was fifth generation born in India, and very, very familiar with Eastern mysticism and Hinduism. And in India, yoga and Hinduism are synonymous. The practice of yoga is something that is done by most Hindus in the last stage of their lives when they're preparing to go into their next into the next phase of life, in their reincarnation cycle. So the Indian, the Hindu believes that their body goes from body to body, so that when they die out of this one body, their soul goes into another body and another body and so on. And depending on what they've accomplished or done in past lives determines how they will come back in future lives. So yoga is a very, very important part of preparing them for death, preparing them for reincarnation, helping them to change their mind through mind exercises, even though they're also physical exercises, but the physical exercises are connected with deities. Every body posture is connected with a deity, the name of an animal that the body gets into in order to be able to become one with the universe, become one with the idea. The Hindu idea of deity is that all nature is divine, if you will. So the problem with man is he doesn't understand his divinity, and he doesn't understand that he's one with the cosmic consciousness. And so yoga is part of changing his consciousness, changing his mind to become one and become united with the sort of higher consciousness, this divinity, before he gives up this body in order to be prepared to bring his soul into the next body.
Well, Carol, this state of mind that is being stressed, this almost altered state of consciousness, do you think this opens one up to demonic possession?
It's certainly, if one comes from a biblical worldview, we would understand it, because the Bible explains that we have to love the Lord our God with all our mind. We have to bring our mind under the mind of Christ. We have to have God's opinion. So from a biblical point of view, we're told not to give up our minds, not to put our minds into neutral, so to speak, because it would open up a doorway for our minds to be taken over by another being. Now, within Hinduism, they don't see that. That is not what they would see in a negative way. They believe that every single energy out there, every single sort of force, if you will, is part of divinity. So, yes, from a biblical viewpoint, of course we would say that it's supernaturally dangerous and something that we mustn't get involved in. From an Eastern perspective, they say you must get involved in that in order to understand the energy that you have inside of yourself that has to be awakened. In fact, even more incredible, it's only in the Bible that the serpent is seen as the enemy of God. But in every other culture, the serpent is believed to be a divinity of wisdom, an energy of wisdom. And actually, within yoga practice, this cobra, this serpent, this energy is called Kundalini. And it is believed to lay dormant at the base of each person's spine and must be awakened through yoga. The serpent power is awakened, brought up through the chakras or psychic energies that are believed to be along the spine, and ultimately to come up to the very top psychic energy, which is called the third eye, between the two eyes up in the forehead. And then this will ultimately open the yoga practitioner up through a mind-altering experience to the understanding that they are divine and part of divinity and can be united with cosmic consciousness or the Hindu god, which is an impersonal force. So it is unbelievable that these two completely opposing worldviews are not, it's not called a worldview when this yoga practice is brought into schools and being practiced now in hundreds of schools across America. The young children, the teacher, Gerber, that put this thing together, specifically worked on taking out everything that appeared to be spiritual. She very, very specifically engineered this. She's been a yoga practitioner since, for many, many years. And she wanted to bring yoga into public schools, but there was this absolute outcry that it was religious, and so she put together this program to supposedly take out all these sort of Sanskrit, Eastern Hindu concepts, and she calls them completely different things. So she calls breathing, which is an important part of yoga to stimulate an altered state of consciousness, she started calling it bunny breathing for her little children. And all these different terms, meditation, she didn't call it meditation, she called it time in. So she changed the names of these practices, stripped every piece of anything that could vaguely be construed as spiritual or Eastern, it would come from its Eastern worldview, its Eastern base, and she was able to bring it into schools. And in fact, the government pays grant money to bring this, to bring these teachers. The federal government gives grants to gym teachers who completed a teacher training course in yoga. And so, hence, we've now got this thing in with kids who we would never, that would never be, it wouldn't even be imaginable that they could read the Bible or say Christian prayers or learn anything Christian in schools, and yet they're able to practice Hindu mysticism, Eastern mysticism, in the form of this sort of new type of yoga.
Well, you know, I think one of the hardest things for the average American, even for many American Christians, to recognize is the fact that there is a spiritual dimension behind everything going on today. We live in a materialistic world, but there is a spiritual dimension in which these demonic spirits and these other forces work. And one of the things, of course, that the mystics do, many of them, will actually tap into this other dimension. Now, certainly our students, when they're putting themselves in this altered state of consciousness, do not understand that there is another dimension, and there really are spiritual forces there that would love to to claim their souls. Sounds pretty absurd, but would you agree that this is the real danger for the people who put their minds into this altered state of consciousness, that they are opening themselves up to be possessed?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, even the Hindus, even strong Hindus, will absolutely admit that yoga is part of their religion. It's part of the sacred teachings and practices of their religion. And while they wouldn't agree that this is negative, the way that Bible-believing Christians would understand that that there are dangers, the Orthodox Hindu will admit that it is a religious practice. But Dr. Stan, I think the difficulties are that people don't believe that Satan is real. They don't believe that he is a person. Somehow they've relegated Satan to this force, this impersonal force, just the way that they've relegated God to being an impersonal force. So when you don't have a personal attribute given to Satan, then it just sort of becomes this, it's just not even explained in a way. For instance, even in the Harry Potter books, where Harry Potter's got this energy, which is explained as the white side of his enemy, the evil Lord Voldemort, who has the dark side. So once we start calling this force the light side and the dark side and not giving it a personal characteristic, then it all sort of becomes rather nebulous and doesn't appear to be dangerous. But from a biblical viewpoint and a biblical understanding, God thought so seriously about this, the personality of these fallen angels. In fact, I think the thing is that many people just don't know enough about angels and the spiritual world. And when I made the movie Supernatural Powers, the battle between good and evil, in fact, I don't know if you know that it got the best documentary for 2006, the last year.
No, I really didn't, but we do carry the video. In fact, I was noticing we had copies of it the other day. That's Supernatural.
I was just thrilled when it was given the best documentary of 2006, but in that we explained that God created all the angels, and that the angels had free will to follow God or not, just as man was created in the image and likeness of God and was given free will, and that there were a third of the angels that chose not to follow God. And these are the fallen angels of the demonic spirits that are longing to have a physical body to come into. So they will come and lie and cheat and try and open the minds of whoever will accept them into whoever's mind will be opened enough so that these beings can work and communicate through a physical body.
Well, you know, the big problem is, Carol, that our ministers are not teaching this. In fact, they haven't been taught it in their school. And many of them don't even believe in hell or the Satan or the demonic spirits or the spiritual battle that's taking place. So how can they teach their parishioners? Well, Carol, you go right ahead with the story, and certainly I was just commenting, one of the big problems we have today is that we have so many Christians who are spiritually illiterate. Their mind have been filled with all sorts of things and doctrines, but they don't understand the very foundation of Christendom and the spiritual battle that began in the Garden of Eden and is coming to its culmination today. And so pick the story up from there.
You're absolutely right, and each of my films that I make, I try in a different way to bring out the idea of a personal God and a personal enemy, and the incredible fight in our minds. Our minds are the battlefield for the enemy of God. And this latest film that I have just completed, in fact, is just going through its completion this week. I went to India. It's been about 4 years in the making. I went to India to interview the experts on Hinduism and yoga teachers and asked them if the practice of yoga, the physical practice of yoga, can be separated from the spiritual practice of yoga. And they absolutely say no, that it is just for them. They are offended that the West treats Hinduism rather like a recipe, and they say that Hinduism is not like a recipe ingredient that can be extracted from yoga, that Hinduism and yoga are totally synonymous, and in fact, Hinduism Today, which is a leading Indian publication, admits that Hinduism is the soul of yoga, and it's based on Hindu scriptures and developed by Hindu sages, and that yoga opens up new and more refined states of mind, and to understand them, one needs to believe in and understand the Hindu way of looking at God. And they warn that a Christian trying to adapt these practices of yoga will likely disrupt their own Christian beliefs. So they understand that there are two different worldviews, that they are opposing worldviews, and yet today we find that Christians are taking yoga, trying to take just the physical practice of yoga and use it just for physical fitness, not realizing that yoga is designed to open up the mind, to introduce the deities as they see them. They call them deities, but from a biblical point of view, we would see them as fallen angels and demons that are in rebellion to God, and that they seek to come into the bodies of human beings so that they can use their vocal cords and their hearts and their minds to perpetuate evil behavior that is quite contrary to what God has designed us to do. And
what you're really describing is demonic possession. So many people say, oh, this could never happen. Nobody's ever possessed by a demon. And don't you for 1 minute believe they could not be. Many people are possessed by demons. And if you haven't yet read this wonderful book we carry called Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, let me suggest you read that. This was my first introduction to this concept. And I will tell you, it's one of the most gripping books you will ever read. And once you've read it, you'll be able to understand what Carol's talking about. There really are people who are actively possessed by demonic spirits. And, of course, it has horrible results. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Carol Matriciana. And we're simply talking about this concept of demonic possession. And, of course, with so many of the things that have been introduced into our churches and into our schools and to in every aspect of our society in the name of yoga and meditation and contemplative prayer and walking the labyrinth, and all of these things are opening you up to demonic possession. So pick the story up there, Carol.
Well, I was telling about the adventures of going to India to interview experts on Hinduism. And, of course, we had done this 2 decades ago when we made our movie Gods of the New Age. And we started talking to the practitioners of yoga back then and followed the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh to his community in Oregon, in Antelope, Oregon, and if you remember that footage of hundreds of orange-clad devotees of Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh involved in these different types of meditation, being completely possessed, and when you saw it on camera and the frightening effects of them opening up their minds, going into these trances, and actually seeing their bodies contort and move, and as they swirled and rotated and fell on the floor, blood coming out of one of their nostrils, and oh, it was just, and screaming, just that, I remember when we were filming that, being in this huge open sort of building that didn't have sides, had a roof, but the screaming, the pitch of the screaming as these hundreds of people were opening themselves up to being possessed.
That was one of the most gripping pieces of film footage I've ever seen.
It was incredible. And Dr. Stan, you are going to be amazed at some of the footage that is in the film that I'm just in the process of completing called Yoga Uncoiled. And there we go to the practitioners of Hinduism in India, where the Hindu Vishwa Parishad, which is one of the largest missionary organizations in India, admits that Hinduism is giving way to that Christianity has now been taken over by Hinduism, and that their missionaries in the East have become the great missionaries through yoga, that they are sending their teachers to the West to take over through yoga. And it is just amazing seeing hundreds and thousands of these Hindu disciples at the Vishwa Hindu Parishad, the Allahabad Kumbh Mela, and you look at them and they look very different to people that appear to be spirit-filled in a good and positive way here. I mean, they were naked, covered in ashes, covered in matted, matting their hair, and looking completely completely demented.
Well, how about a demonic? Would that be a better...
Absolutely. And
demonic,
it's interesting when you actually see all this on camera, where people say that, no, this can't possibly happen. But, you know, I have been in the middle of demon-possessed people, and I know it to be real. I have watched it. In fact, in one of our filming sessions, this fellow came into the tent as we were changing our films in the camera, and we needed a sort of a place away from the sun so that we could change our equipment. This fellow came in with this deep, dark, haunting, terrified voice, and at swords, here I was at the end of his sword as he was about to pierce his sword through me. And fortunately, by the power, the almighty power of a much greater God, I was able to calm this demented person to, to leave me alone.
But, now, of course, did you get this on film?
No. We were changing our... At that particular point, we were changing our film in the camera, so we couldn't take any film as this was taking place. But I'll tell you, it is absolutely sketched so clearly, etched on my mind. The moment that happened was indeed a scary moment for me. But I have been in the middle. I've been involved in counseling people that have been in satanic cults and in Hindu cults, and so I have had the opportunity of speaking to people who are demon-possessed, and actually speaking to these voices that come out of them and accuse me, want to kill me.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana, and Carol is simply talking about how she's had the opportunity on many occasions to minister to people who are demonically possessed who would actually threaten to kill her. And of course we have 4 tape sets with other people who are really in these deliverance ministries. People laugh at it. Oh, there's no such thing. Yes, there is today. Unless you understand that there really is another dimension, there really are demonic spirits, there really are people who worship Lucifer, who hate Christianity, and of course they're doing everything they can today to destroy and discredit Christianity right here in America. And of course, when we see the witchcraft being even taught in our schools with the writings of Harry Potter, this is applied witchcraft from 101. And yet this is be allowed in our schools. But we would never dare and allow mention of the word of the name of Jesus Christ or have a prayer in our schools. Go ahead, Carol.
Yes, it is. It's amazing. And I think one of the insidious things about, when Satanism or the cults are very obvious, people recognize them. But when they're sugar-coated and cleaned up and called scientific or child-friendly and can come into our schools, it's absolutely awful. I was talking about this huge, great Indian, this Hindu festival called the Kumbh Mela, and how some years ago I was present at that, and it's organized by India's Vishva Hindu Parishad, which is probably the world's largest missionary organization. And the Kumbh Mela that I went to in 1979 in Allahabad, India, there was actually the Second World Congress on Hinduism. There were about probably 60,000 delegates from around the world that were speaking at that. And one of the speakers said that our mission in the West has been crowned with fantastic success. Hinduism is becoming the dominant world religion, and the end of Christianity has come near. And in this film that I'm just finishing, called Yoga Uncoiled, we show how yoga teachers in the West have become the leading missionaries of Hinduism, and there are probably about 70,000 of them in America today, in more than 20,000 locations, teaching probably an estimated 35 to 40 million fitness fanatics.
This is Dr. Stan, and Carol is basically saying that they're teaching, there's 70,000 missionaries here from the Hindu countries, and they're teaching 30 to 40 million people in these new programs?
Yes, I mean 30 to 40 million Americans are taking yoga across this nation. And what they don't understand is the yoga teachers are basically the leading missionaries of Hinduism, because Hinduism and yoga have been repackaged as a fitness exercise. People don't understand that when they go into the gyms, when they go into the YMCAs, when they go into bars or schools and are taking yoga, that they don't understand that they are being indoctrinated into Eastern mysticism, a mind changing program. It's not physical exercise. If you want to do physical exercise, you do not sit down in a lotus position and have your mind changed. You go out and you sweat out on a soccer field or in a swimming pool or on the tennis courts. And if you want to do physical exercise, then do radical physical exercise. But yoga specifically teaches to have your mind change. These exercise programs are presented. They offer themselves as stress reduction or burnout reduction or concentration benefit programs. This is not exercise. Yes, there's some stretching involved, and yes, there's a little bit of sort of rolling around, but it's not physical exercise. So what's happening is yoga is basically experiencing a renaissance worldwide, and it's probably about a $27 billion industry. And here this new type of Eastern mysticism is coming into our gyms and health exercises, health clinics, health studios across the nation, offering stress benefits, and is promoted in hospital programs as an alternative medical therapy. It claims to reduce blood pressure and benefit the heart. And it is a new type of mental conditioning, now once again being made child-friendly, just like witchcraft was made child-friendly and introduced into the school system through Harry Potter books. So today, we have this new type of yoga being made child-friendly in 100 schools across the nation in 26 states. It's being called Gerber's Yoga Ed Program, and children are being taught, and it is being promoted as bringing in good benefits for young children, that they can, that they have better behavior and better grades if they do this program. And you know, at a time when public schools, there's no religion, that religion should not be taught in schools, and if they've kicked out Christianity, then also the practice of yoga should not be in public schools. So it's just, everything is changing its language, it's changing its presentation, but basically the bottom line is to condition our minds, to get us into a relationship with supernatural beings out there that are changing us and ultimately preparing us for the world leader, the Antichrist, that is going to come in and rule the world. And there's this sort of huge global conditioning process going on where that so many people just don't understand. And it's interesting that it's not only coming in through school programs or fitness programs, or but it's also coming through the church. And it's being called, this sort of new Eastern mysticism is being called contemplative prayer or centering techniques. And what it does is it gets Christians into a place where they're not meditating on the Bible, they're not meditating on the opinion of God, they're relating to spiritual experiences and feelings and having their mind emptied to be able to bring in these sort of feel-good ideas that certainly are changing the psyche of the practitioners. I mean, I don't doubt for a moment that these young school kids that are being involved, there's this school program that's been going on now for about 6 years, a six-year-old yoga program that is being promoted, is helping distracted children to focus. They're saying that if your children have ADD and focusing issues, that this type of yoga is very important to help children focus and improve their behavior. So here, once again, a spiritual exercise is coming into the schools to change our children's spiritual, mental, spiritual being, to make them more docile or more easily pliable to a controlling method that is going to ultimately be able to come in some global capacity to change the minds of people and make them docile and prepare them for becoming world leader. And, you know, interestingly, of course, we see the same ecumenical program coming through Islam. Not very long ago, there was the official Iranian radio that started broadcasting these lengthy theories on the imminent appearance of their messianic figure, who it was believed would defeat Islam's enemies, and which, of course, are the Christians and the Jews. And here, there was this, the entire world is going to have this Islamic Shiite rule, and the Muslims are waiting for their 12th Imam, or Mahdi, to come in, and this Mahdi will appear suddenly in Mecca. And interestingly, the Iranian president expects both Jesus and the Mahdi to return and wipe away repression. So we've got the Muslims waiting for the Messiah, we've got Christians waiting for their sort of coming Messiah.
The return of Christ, and of course the Jews are waiting for the Messiah, and the Hindu is waiting for Maitreya. So
that's exactly it. And so there's this huge conditioning process that's going on, and so many people are just deceived and blind and don't understand that in order for this world being to, this being to come in, there's got to be a conditioning process. And the conditioning process is being done through mind-altering techniques bringing in spiritual entities into very, very young kids through all sorts of methods and means. And one of them is yoga, which is what my new film is going to be about. And I think you will be absolutely amazed when you look at a Christian yoga teacher that I interviewed in this, who starts talking about how she has completely turned around Christian yoga or the practice of Eastern mysticism and calling it Christian yoga. It is the most incredible interview. It will be an amazing film. I truly believe it's the best documentary that I've had the privilege of making, and I've made about, over 53 documentaries in the last couple of decades, and I think this one is going to be the most powerful.
When are we going to have it available?
Well, I'm going to send you your free complimentary director's copy next week, Dr. Stanley.
Right,
you are going to see it.
Well, we'll look forward to it, and certainly we'll carry that, and we'll do everything we can to help you get this material disseminated across America, because I think you're certainly, we're very fortunate to have you and your talent trying to utilize video to educate the people. But before we go on, I want you to get out your webpage. I want you to get out the information on how people can get your material. We do carry a great deal of Carol's material, and we'll probably be carrying more, but I want you to know how to get in touch with her material and with her webpage. So what can you tell them?
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, they can go on to my www.caryl, I spell my name C-A-R-Y-L, TV, like television, .com. And if they'd like to even make pre-orders, pre-sales for the Yoga Uncoiled video, I will be very, very happy to take any pre-sale orders. Or they can phone me at 951-301-1101.
Yes, one more time, please.
951-301-1101. A lot of ones and a lot of zeros. 301-1101.
The thing is that the average American finds it so difficult to believe that this could be in our churches, yet it is. It's called the emerging church. And what we want is for Christians to have an experience. Not to study Christianity, the Word of God, nor to experience Christianity. And we're looking for that Christian experience. And, of course, what we're really doing is opening ourselves up to demonic possession. And the same thing, of course, really is true in every aspect of life. It's in our schools. Certainly, it's in our movies. It's everywhere we look. And the target is the mind of the American people. Altering our perception of reality. They're doing a tremendous job about it. And the big problem is it is taking place because Christians do not understand the spiritual warfare that we're engaged in. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. I agree with much of what you say, and it's just, I'm amazed that here you are, always working hard, opening up people's minds, and it still amazes me that people are deceived and can't see. You know, it's a spiritual blindness. That's what's so incredible. A spiritual blindness clouds the minds of so many so that they cannot see the biblical reality. And I have seen the reality of demonic beings, spiritual beings. I've grown up in India, and it's very prevalent, and it's very accepted. And, you know, one sees it in, I mean, my daily living, my going to school and living in India, one could see spiritual apparitions and signs and wonders in a way, and incredible powers that came with these things when you gave yourself over to them. And here we've got young kids in, through the Harry Potter series that want to be like their little hero, Harry Potter, and they want to be able to do the things that Harry Potter can do, the magic that Harry can do. And Harry says, just concentrate. Concentrate on what you want and it'll happen. And here he specifically teaches young children how to be able to train their minds and be able to think in a different way. And Harry, of course, lives in this world of supernaturalism, in the so-called imaginary school of Hogwarts, school of witchcraft and wizardry, where there are ghosts that live with them, and animals, beings that change into from humans to animals and animals to humans. So there is every aspect of the supernatural world is illustrated in a child-friendly way so that children can see the supernatural through the eyes of Harry. But it looks exciting, and it's a power that Harry has and is able to work and overcome difficulties with, and so they want it. So here it is being shown in the books and, of course, in movies, as you mentioned. I made a film called Gods of Entertainment, where we show the occultism that is prevalent through special effects and the incredible ability of the movie world to be able to make fantasy into reality and capture the imaginations of young children through video games, through the internet, through movies. And so their minds are continually being excited and fascinated by the occult world, which is made to look good if they stay within the white realm of it. And of course, it's also meant to look fearful if you go to the dark side, but they're being told that they can control not going into the dark side, whereas in the world of Harry Potter, you know, you can see that there are dangers in that dark side, and J.K. Rowling, the author, says that each book is darker and darker, and she's going to be coming out with book number 7 in July, and of course Warner Brothers is coming out with film number 5 based on book number 5 in July. So here we have this barrage of more child-friendly witchcraft, and then you've got the hero of Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe, who has been playing the role of Harry Potter, who just in a couple of weeks is going to be on the theater in the West End, on the stage in the West End, appearing nude and naked in an erotic scene with a horse. So here this young 17-year-old boy who millions of children all over the world see as their hero is getting into this sort of perverse child pornography, and kids are just being bombarded with sort of desensitization of morality, desensitization of occultism, and not being able to know what is right and what is wrong. It's a very, very scary world for young children, I think.
Well, I think they've targeted the minds of our children, and they're doing such a good job through the miracle of video and through the miracle of film. And the average parent doesn't have any idea that this is not simply fun and games. They're really gambling with the souls of their children, because that's what this is really all about. You know, I was just thinking, Carol, looking back 30 years, you know, when I was getting started in my study, I had no idea that there was this other realm out there, that there was another dimension. The idea of the true supernatural was so far from my mind, because after all, I lived in a materialistic world. And it really wasn't until the early 1980s I began to realize that there is this other dimension, there is this other place out there, that where so much of this spiritual battle is being fought. And, you know, until people understand that the purpose of witchcraft is to be able to reach the beings from the other dimension, and they really are able to do that. That's the frightening thing. They're in communion with them. They think that they're good spirits are going to help them, but of course they're not good spirits. They will tell you, well, they're white witches and black witches. No, they're all black witches. They're only shades of gray. And of course, they're dabbling with things they have no idea about, and will very well cost them their eternal souls. We'll be back here in just a moment here with Carol Matriciana, and of course her new film is going to be on yoga. I can hardly wait to see it. Well, Carol, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Well, Dr. Stan, I just would encourage all your viewers to keep in touch with everything you do, listen to you regularly, go into your shop, buy your product, and please come and visit my webpage, www.caryltv.com, and learn and become enlightened to discern, learn about the times we live in, discern the times we live in. These are treacherous times, and we need to be completely as wise as serpents and gentle as doves in these days when our minds are being clouded, whether it's through Islam, the invasion of Islam in America, in fact, that's going to be my next film after this one on yoga, but just to be able to see what is taking place and how they are targeting our young children is very scary indeed. And I thank you so much for what you are doing in alerting and waking up the American public to the dangers in all sorts of realms, in the health realm, in the physical realm, in the spiritual realm. I thank you very, very much.
Well, I think we're really very, very privileged to have the opportunity to have a voice in time like this.
Mm-hmm.
And to know that we have people all throughout the world who are listening to our programs. In fact, it's sort of an awesome responsibility. Because, of course, I feel that I have to present, you know, a reflection of what we would hope that Christians should. And, of course, being a fallible human being, sometimes when we'll have somebody come on, it'll be very rude and do everything you can to get us antagonized and not to respond, you know, as you ordinarily would anticipate. But, of course, to try to make people understand that Christians are different. And, of course, this is not because we're different on our own, but only because of our reliance on our Lord. And hopefully we can have some impact on people, and hopefully some of our listeners will come to know the Lord. That's my hope and purpose, because I'm certainly not here to entertain. I'm here to make people understand we're involved in the spirits of battle,
mm-hmm.
and they certainly better find out which side of that battle they're on, because there's no neutral position there. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And that's the reason I make each of my films, and every one of them I try and take the opportunity of showing the difference between the two sides. The side that Jesus Christ has come to set us free from sin. He is our Savior. He wants us to have a time with Him in eternity. And then the other side, His rebellious fallen angels that want to dupe us. And,
hold on for just 30 seconds here, and I'll let you finish the thought here. Well, Carol was simply talking about this battle that exists, and there really are two sides. There's certainly the sides of Christianity, and then the sides of the demons and the fallen angels, and you're going to have to decide which side you're on, because there is no neutral position here. Why don't you finish your thought there, Carol?
Exactly. There just absolutely isn't. You know, Jesus Christ himself came to set us free from this absolutely awful condition that we are caught in, the condition of sin, and we can either give our lives to Christ, who has set us free from that, or we can attempt to set ourselves free through all sorts of human methods and ideologies and philosophies and mind-bending and mind-twisting remedies, which I'm afraid will absolutely lead nowhere. And I can tell you, because I was involved in the dark side and have certainly seen both sides of the supernatural world, and I thank my Lord Jesus Christ every day for setting me free from the dark side.
God bless you. Good night, Carol. And we'll look forward to having you on again sometime.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, fine. Well, certainly Carol Matriciana is one of my favorite guests. We always enjoy having her with us here. And I hope you'll heed what she has to say. She's come from the other side. She realizes this supernatural power is not imaginary. It is real. But you do not want to even think about tapping into it. Oh, you may get a great wealth, you may get great pleasure, you may get all sorts of advantages and recognition. But you'll pay for what you gain here with your eternal soul. So understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. We do hope that many of you will go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and we do carry a number of Carol's videos and or DVDs. And we actually we actually, in the past, have carried some of Carol's books. We'll have to check and see if we still have them. We do have a wonderful book. It's called The Beautiful Side of Evil. It's written by Johanna Michelson, who is a medium, who is actually, being trained as a psychic healer until she suddenly found this was all demonic. That's The Beautiful Side of Evil, and then our four tape set on the supernatural with my interviews with Johanna Michelson. You certainly want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which begins to put this into a geopolitical perspective. You'll certainly want to get Malachi Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil, the story of five exorcisms which were certified by the Catholic Church. And I will tell you, when you read that book, you will never look at the world through the same eyes again. We also recommend that people will get the four tape set we have, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. You get them together, the book and the four tape set, that certainly reduce consideration. We do hope that, of course, many of you will get the videos we carry. They sold their souls for rock and roll, pointing out how these influences are in the music business and the music industry. If you've not yet seen the Da Vinci Con put out by our good friend Pastor Joe Schimmel, who put out the DVDs, They Sold Their Soul, the Da Vinci Con goes into what Hollywood is doing and the influence of Gnosticism, which is simply a throwback to an ancient heresy that existed in the first century A.D., and of course that can be traced back to the teachings of the ancient Kabbalah, which can be traced back to the ancient mystery religions. And there is a continuity of evil since the Garden of Eden, and it is coming to its culmination at this very time we live in. We live in one of the most exciting times in all history, but you better understand what's going on and whose side you're on. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen directly or indirectly to our radio programs on the Internet 5 hours a day, 4 hours a day on shortwave, where, of course, you can listen to our programs 9 hours a day on Telstar 5 satellite. We don't expect you to do it. We hope that you're going to tell others about our programs, but listen when you can. Get educated. And, of course, get the material we talk about. Pull down our newsletters, read them, save them, study them, and then pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, because we're on the front lines of the spiritual battle. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.